Jesus said, "I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. The hired hand, who is not the shepherd and does not own the sheep, sees the wolf coming and leaves the sheep and runs away. And the wolf snatches them and scatters them. The hired hand runs away because a hired hand does not care for the sheep. I am the good shepherd. I know my own, and my own know me. Just as the Father knows me, and I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. I have other sheep that do not belong to this fold. I must bring them also, so they will listen to my voice. So there will be one flock, one shepherd. For this reason the Father loves me, because I lay down my life in order to take it up again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of my own accord. I have power to lay it down, and I have power to take it up again. I have received this command from my Father." Today is Good Shepherd Sunday. This comes up every year on the fourth Sunday of Easter. And this is the first week since Easter that we haven't had a story of Jesus appearing to the disciples following the resurrection. But it's still an Easter story, I think. I think it's a precursor to the Easter story, but one that describes how the resurrected Jesus lives with us today. He relates to the world as the perfect shepherd relates to the sheep. In the image of Jesus as the good shepherd, I think we do connect with the resurrected Jesus and the resurrected life that I spoke of last week. Now, Scripture gives us a lot of images for the way we see Jesus and the way Jesus relates to the world. Jesus is the bread of life. Jesus is the light of the world. Jesus is the vine. Jesus is the gate. But of all these, Jesus as the good shepherd is probably the one that is most cherished. When we think of Jesus as a good shepherd, we're likely to imagine Jesus sitting with a lamb in his lap, or maybe a lamb over his shoulders. You see that in stained glass a lot. This is the image that we kind of cherish and hold on to. Jesus the good shepherd taking care of the sheep. It is a small wonder, really, that Jesus used the image of a shepherd and sheep. It was a part of his heritage and culture. It is certainly a part of the Old Testament, or as is the case, the Hebrew Scriptures or Jesus' Bible. The image of shepherd appears regularly. And frankly, it starts with Cain and Abel, children of Adam and Eve. You will recall that Abel was a shepherd and Cain was a farmer. And that turned into a bit of a problem. Genesis chapter 4 says, "Abel was a keeper of sheep and Cain a farmer. Cain brought an offering to God from the produce of his farm. Abel also brought an offering, but from the firstborn animals of his herd, choice cuts of meat. God likes Abel and his offering, but Cain and his offering didn't get his approval." Yeah, remember what happened after that? It's an unfortunate day for Cain. Abel, come on, people. I'm waiting. We're told in Genesis after that that Abraham, the father of the nation of Israel, kept sheep. Moses, you recall Moses, who was sent to Egypt to free the people, the Hebrews who were in captivity. Moses was tending a flock of sheep of his father-in-law, Jethro, when he saw the burning bush that told him to go to Egypt, which following that comes the plagues, and then everything that's in Charlton Heston's The Ten Commandments. It's all in there, and frankly, it's a pretty accurate retelling of the story. So if you want to know about Moses, go see it. King David, arguably the greatest king in all of Israel, in the history of Israel, started as a shepherd boy, out keeping the flock. Samuel came to anoint the king, and he tried one brother after another, and none of them were the right one. And he said, "Do you have any more kids?" said, well, there's this little pipsqueak David. He's out tending the flock. Of course, we know what happened. David came in and was anointed and eventually became that great king. Not without blemish, but great king nonetheless. The book of Isaiah describes God directly as a shepherd. Isaiah writes, he tends his flock like a shepherd. He gathers the lambs in his arms and carries them close to his heart. He gently leads those who have young. Isn't that the image you get of Jesus when you think of the good shepherd? Now, in the book of Ezekiel, God actually condemns the shepherds who are not looking after the sheep. He writes, ah, you shepherds of Israel who have been feeding yourselves, should not shepherds feed the sheep? You eat the fat, you clothe yourselves with the wool, you slaughter the fatlings, but you do not feed the sheep. You have not strengthened the weak, you have not healed the sick, you have not bound up the injured, you have not brought back the strayed, you have not sought the lost. Are those not all the things that Jesus does? Ezekiel goes on, with force and harshness you have ruled the sheep, so they were scattered, because there was no shepherd. And scattered they became food for all the wild animals. We become scattered, but the good shepherd calls us back together. Now those images continue in the New Testament, right at the beginning. Jesus the baby getting visited by the wise men. We are reminded by the chief priests and the scribes talking to the evil King Herod of the prophecy of the Messiah. They tell him that he will come from Bethlehem and be a ruler who is to shepherd my people Israel. So right from the beginning when he is a baby, the prophecy is being laid on him that he will be a shepherd of the people. Matthew and Mark both tell the story of Jesus having compassion on a great crowd because they were like a sheep without a shepherd. And you remember what happens after that? He multiplies some loaves and some fishes and feeds them all. The Gospels relate Jesus' parable of the lost sheep. The good shepherd searches for the one sheep that is lost. At the Last Supper, Jesus said to his disciples, you will all become deserters of me this night, for it is written, I will strike the shepherd, and the sheep of the flock will be scattered. All of that brings us to the Gospel of John, where we get this morning's image of Jesus. I am the good shepherd, he says. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. No greater love than to lay down one's life for one's friends. And it is that love that ties our reading this morning from 1 John into this reading from the Gospel of Jesus as the good shepherd. Because it is the love of self-sacrifice, agape love. And this is what brings the story back to Easter. This metaphor of the shepherd and the sheep works on many levels. The individual sheep in a flock all look alike to the untrained eye. A good shepherd, however, can tell them apart because of their defects and their particular traits. Which is a good metaphor for us. Jesus knows us. He knows us each by name. He might recognize us by our otherwise indistinguishable features and perhaps by our foibles. But Jesus knows us. And he knows us each personally and calls us each by name. But it is nonetheless an imperfect metaphor. After all, what do we know about sheep? Now, somebody I'm sure will take issue with this. But as far as I know, sheep are not terribly intelligent. Certainly, they need protection from predators. They even need protection from themselves. Sheep will graze on some hills until there is no grass left, but not move on, trying to graze in what is now functionally a desert. To their own destruction, they will not move on. It has been said that they are creatures of bad hygiene. They will pollute their own ground until it is run over with disease and parasites. To their own detriment, they will live in their own filth. Now, maybe for some of you that metaphor works better than for others. I would like to think it's another imperfect piece of the metaphor. The last thing I'd say about that metaphor is, where it perhaps falls a little short, is that sheep are incapable of looking beyond themselves. We are not. We are able to do that. And I think that's where this reading from 1 John comes in. This reading about love. He writes, "We know love by this, that he laid down his life for us, and we ought to lay down our lives for one another. How does God's love abide in anyone who has the world's goods and sees a brother or sister in need and yet refuses to help?" Let me restate that sentence. How does God's love abide in anyone who has the world's good and sees a brother or sister in need and yet refuses to help? He goes on, "Little children, let us love, not in word or speech, but in truth and action." This is agape love. This is the love that is self-sacrificial. This is the love of Jesus Christ on the cross. This is the love and truth and action that we are called to. And I think that's what brings us back to the Good Shepherd, if indirectly, and to the resurrected love I spoke of last week. The love John is speaking of is that self-sacrificial love. In fact, John goes on to identify God with it in such a way that he is the one who says explicitly, God is love, and goes on to say that we know God when we are in a loving relationship with somebody else, that love that is self-sacrificial. God is in that love, and that's how we know God. The big key to understanding agape love is to realize that it is known from the action that it takes. People are accustomed to thinking of love as a feeling, but feelings come and go. Agape love that is self-sacrificial is determined and is forever. God so loved the world, agape, that he gave his only son. Christ so loved the world that he gave his life, agape love. He made it clear in the Garden of Gethsemane that he did not want to go to the cross. Those were his feelings. But he went to the cross because that was the self-sacrificial love that he offered for us. Agape love is indeed the love on the cross. And it is our love, John tells us, when we love in truth and action. That, I think, is the most important thing about agape love, about the love of the Good Shepherd who lays down his life for the sheep, and about the person called by John to love in truth and action. It is self-sacrificial. When we live that life of self-sacrificial love, we are living the resurrected life that I spoke about last week. And that's where we come back to Easter. That's the love of God in the Good Shepherd, the love of Christ, our Shepherd. And that's what makes the story of the Good Shepherd a perfect story for the season of Easter. Amen.